Bo, Scratch, and their new companion, Jake Riley, hadn't reached Whiskey Flats by nightfall, if indeed the settlement lay in this direction. That seemed likely, considering that John Henry Braddock had been heading south too. It might take several days to get there, or they might ride right into the place tomorrow. Only time would tell. Bo and Scratch found another good place to camp, this one on top of a small hill with a view of the surrounding countryside. Considering the location, the Texans deemed it best not to have a campfire, which would have been more visible here than the place they had camped in the night before. It was still possible that Tom Harding and his gun hands might be coming after them, although Bo deemed that more unlikely with each day that passed.
Don't see how we can have a decent meal without a fire.
Cold food will fill your belly just as well as warm, and the weather ain't nippy enough at night to freeze off anything important.
I just don't understand why you have to be so careful all the time.
That's because we want to stay alive, and the best way to get dead in a hurry out here is to be careless.
What about Braddock? He wasn't being careless. He was just riding along the trail, and now he's dead as he can be.
Sometimes bad luck can't be avoided, no matter what you do. But it doesn't hurt to try to tip the odds in your favor.
I guess that makes sense. Sort of like playing poker.
Cheating at poker, you mean?
Anyway, you were the one who was worried about Indians, Jake. You wouldn't want to advertise our presence up here, just in case there is a war party anywhere around these parts, would you?
Riley shut up after that. They made another meal on biscuits and jerky, washed down with cold, clear water from a nearby creek. Afterward, Riley leaned back on a rock and took a cigar out of his pocket. He was reaching for a match when Bo stopped him.
Might as well put it away, unless you want to chew on it unlit, Jake.
Damn it! Now you mean to tell me that I can't smoke either?
I'd like a pipe myself, but the smell of tobacco smoke can drift a long way. If anybody's looking for us, it'd be easy to follow the smoke right back here to us.
It's like traveling with a pair of damned old mother hens.
These mother hens are trying to keep you alive, boy. Now it seems to me like we've pulled your bacon out of the fire a couple times already. You ought to be a mite grateful.
I am.
If that's true, then maybe you'll consider an idea I have in mind.
An idea? What sort of idea?
I've been thinking about what's going to happen when we get to Whiskey Flats.
Well, I sort of figured we'd go our separate ways. No offense, and like I told you, I'm grateful to you fellas for what you done for me. But let's face it, we're just not cut from the same cloth. You're cramping my style.
Cramping your style? Why, you little pup!
Take it easy. Jake, how do you think the people of Whiskey Flats are going to feel when they find out that John Henry Braddock, the man they were counting on to bring law and order to their community, is dead?
Disappointed, I suppose. But that's not my problem. It's not yours either. Hell, you're doing them a favor just by bringing them the news that Braddock is never going to get there.
But what if he does? What if John Henry Braddock rides into Whiskey Flats after all?
Well, that's going to be pretty hard, seeing as how he's dead and buried.
What sort of crazy notions floating around inside that noggin of yours, Bo Creel?
It's really simple. John Henry Braddock can still take the job of marshal in Whiskey Flats and bring law and order to the settlement.
Bo held out his hand, and the light of the rising moon glinted on the badge that rested on his palm once again.
All you have to do, Jake, is pretend to be Braddock. You can be the marshal of Whiskey Flats.
You're crazy, plum loco.
Not at all. Makes perfect sense. The letter from Mayor McHale makes it clear that neither he nor anyone else in Whiskey Flats has ever actually met Braddock. The town council arranged to hire him as marshal through correspondence. McHale says that they're all looking forward to meeting him for the first time.
But maybe they've seen pictures of him, or at least know what he's supposed to look like.
You saw Braddock for yourself. He's about the same age and size as you, Jake, and your hair color is close enough to pass for his.
But you're forgetting one thing. I'm not a lawman.
But you could be. All you have to do is pretend to be Braddock.
And bring law and order to some wide-open, lawless town? How in blazes am I supposed to do that?
That's simple, too. We'll help you.
Now I know you're loco.
Just think about it. Jake here tells the folks in Whiskey Flats that he's John Henry Braddock. They'll believe him. And to help him restore order, he's brought a couple of deputies with him. That'd be you and me, Scratch.
Huh.
You can't actually be considering this insane scheme.
Well, you know, it just might work. Take a heap of luck, but it might work.
It would take me agreeing to go along with it, too, and I'm not gonna. Do I look like a lawman to you? Do you really think I'm cut out for that sort of thing?
You pretended to be a railroad man. all you'd have to do is pretend to be a marshal. Unless you think you couldn't convince anybody that's who you were.
I can convince anybody of anything. Hell, I once persuaded a little gal in Kansas that I was Jesse James. If I wanted to, I could put it over.
You see, Jake, you just got to have confidence.
Riley stood up and paced back and forth across the campsite. He took off his hat and ran his fingers through his tousled blonde hair.
What's in it for me?
In a town as grateful as Whiskey Flats is bound to be when the man they believe to be John Henry Braddock shows up, well, seems to me that a fella could get just about anything he wanted in a town like that.
Yes, that's exactly right. All I'd have to do is pretend to be the marshal for a little while, and then they'd open up the town wide for me. It's brilliant! Good Lord, Bo, I never realized you had such a streak of larceny in you, too.
Just don't forget your faithful deputies when it comes time for the big cleanup.
Man, don't you worry about that. You boys will get your share. Well, maybe not quite as big as my share, of course, since I'll be the marshal and you'll just be deputies. But we'll all come out of this rich men. Rich men, I tell you.
Riley finally sat down again to turn over all the potentially lucrative possibilities in his mind.
Yeah, reckon I'd best have a look around before we turn in. Just make sure there ain't nobody lurking in these parts. Bo, why don't you come with me?
I can do that. You be all right here, Jake?
Huh? Oh, yeah, sure. You fellas take your time. I got plenty of thinking and planning to do.
Bo and Scratch nodded and moved off into the darkness, carrying their Winchesters with them. They moved with the silent grace of born frontiersmen and didn't stop until they were well out of easy earshot of the camp.
Now how about you telling me just what the hell is really going on here?
Maybe some of Riley's shady nature is rubbed off on me.
Not hardly. You got something else in mind, I can tell.
All right, you got me. I knew I couldn't put it over on you. Jake was easy. All I had to do was make him think that we're as crooked as he is, and he went right along with the idea.
Yeah, like he said about swindling somebody. Make a fella think he might get something for nothing, and he'll do whatever you want him to.
Exactly. Jake thinks he's going to Whiskey Flats to swindle the people there, but he's actually going to be their marshal and do some growing up.
Uh-huh. I believe that when I see it.
Think about it. He's a smart kid. You've seen that for yourself. And he's got some saying, too. He's in the habit of running away from trouble. But back him into a corner, and he might actually grow a backbone and become a man.
And you're planning on backing him into that corner?
If Whiskey Flats is as full of trouble as Mayor McHale's letter indicates, he'll do the job for us. Jake won't have any choice but to grow up in a hurry while he's pretending to be the marshal.
Either that or get himself killed and us right along with him.
Well, there's that possibility to consider, too.
In the end, Scratch went along with the idea, of course, just as Bo knew he would. Scratch might not have a very high opinion of Riley, but he trusted Bo's instincts. Anyway, Bo had figured out why Scratch and Riley didn't get along all that well. They were just too much alike, at least as far as their devil-may-care natures went. It was no wonder they sometimes rubbed each other the wrong way. The Texans took turns standing watch again that night, and early the next morning they were on their way again. Riley was still excited and full of talk about how they would carry off the deception once they reached Whiskey Flats.
I've seen plenty of big city police, but not that many frontier marshals.
Don't worry. We've run into plenty of small town star packers, so we know how they act. You can just follow our lead.
Yeah, but it'll have to look like I'm giving the orders. After all, I'm the marshal.
And we're just the deputies. We ain't forgot.
We'll make it look like you're in charge, Jake. That's what the people in Whiskey Flats will be expecting, so that's what they'll see.
After the three riders made their way by a twisting trail over a couple of ridges, the terrain began to flatten out more as the valley they were following once again spread out between mountains to east and west. The countryside took on the look of cattle country, with broad, lushly grassed pastures interspersed with creeks and bands of trees. Scratch spotted some cows grazing in the distance and pointed them out.
This is prime range. Whoever owns it's got himself a mighty nice spread.
How far do you think we are from Whiskey Flats?
No way of telling yet, but there's bound to be a settlement pretty close by. The ranches in these parts will need a supply center.
And a place for the cowhands to raise hell on Saturday night and payday.
Man, I'd like to spend some time in a saloon. Some good whiskey, a game of cards, a few pretty little gals and spangled dresses to choose from.
You know, you're supposed to be cleaning the place up, not adding to the general debauchery.
But I can at least have a drink, can I?
I reckon even a famous lawman can be allowed a drink now and then.
For a minute there, I was afraid you were going to say I can't have any fun at all.
The three men reined their mounts to a halt as shots blasted through the midday air. Up ahead, the trail twisted through some trees, so they couldn't see very far along it. The reports sounded like they were coming from handguns, and they drew closer as Bo, Scratch, and Riley listened. After a moment, they heard the rumble of hoofbeats, too. A desperate pursuit was underway and coming straight at them.
What do we do?
Take that badge I gave you out of your pocket and pin it to your lapel. We don't know what's going on here, and until we do, I don't want there to be any question about you being a lawman.
Keep your eyes and ears open. The way those hombres are riding hell for leather, they'll be here any minute.
Sure enough, a rider soon swept around the bend in the trail up ahead and pelted toward them, leaning over the neck of his horse and kicking it in the sides to get all the speed out of it that he could. Bo couldn't tell anything about the man, other than that he was riding for his life. It quickly became apparent why the lone horseman was fleeing. Half a dozen more riders thundered around the bend. Puffs of gun smoke spurted from the revolvers they brandished as they fired after the madly galloping rider.
6-1 odds, Bo. I don't cotton to that no matter what that lone fella's done.
Neither do I. Let's put a stop to it and see if we can find out what's going on here.
What do I do?
Let's move aside and let him pass. Then we'll stop those men who are chasing.
The three of them pulled their mounts to the side of the trail. Mere seconds later, the fleeing rider flashed past them. Bo caught only a glimpse of him. He appeared to be small and fairly young, maybe just a boy. He wore fringed buckskins and a battered old brown hat with the brim pushed up in front. Foamy sweat covered the heaving flanks of the horse, which was clearly on its last legs. As soon as the rider had gone by, Bo urged the dun back out into the trail. Scratch and Riley followed suit with their horses. They sat in the middle of the trail, blocking the pursuit. Of course, the gang of gunmen could have gone around them, but instead they stubbornly came straight on, although they ceased shooting as soon as Bo, Scratch, and Riley got in the line of fire. Bo glanced over at Riley and saw that the young man looked scared but determined.
Just remember, you're a famous fighting marshal. You don't have any reason to be scared of these hombres. They ought to be scared of you.
Riley nodded and looked a little more resolute. As long as he had a role to play, he was more confident. The stocky, gray-bearded man, who seemed to be leading the charge, hauled back on his reins with one hand and lifted the other in a signal for his companions to stop. As the horses slowed, dust swirled around them for a moment. As it cleared away, Bo could see that the men were all hopping mad.
What the hell you think you're doing? You're letting that damn rustler get away!
Bo glanced over his shoulder. The buckskin-clad rider had slowed. Well out of handgun range now, he brought his mount to a stop before the poor, exhausted horse collapsed.
He doesn't look like he's going anywhere right now. How do you know he's a rustler? Did you catch him with a running iron or driving off some of your stock?
He was skulking around on Rockin' B Range, looking over our herd. Mr. Bascom's been losing stock right and left, and anybody who ain't got no business here is suspect. For that matter, who the hell are you?
Bo looked at Riley, who was hanging back a little. Riley urged his horse forward so that the badge pinned to his coat was more visible.
This is John Henry Braddock, the new marshal of Whiskey Flats. We're his deputies.
That took the men by surprise. They were all rugged-looking hombres in range clothes, but even though they had been blazing away at the fleeing rider, it was clear to Bo's experienced eye that they were cowhands, not hired gunmen. Faced with confronting a representative of the law, they were suddenly a little nervous.
Marshal? I heard something about a new marshal coming to town.
Whiskey Flats is close by then?
About 5 miles on down this trail. What about that thieving son of a bitch? I'll bet he works for that damn North.
Well, it's pretty obvious that he doesn't have any cows in his pockets, so I don't think he's done any rustling today. We'll question him, find out what he's doing on Rockin' B Range. I reckon this Mr. Bascom you mentioned is the owner.
That's right. Chet Bascom. As fine a man as you'll find in these parts. Not like that no-good polecat Steve North.
You hombres can go on back about your business. We'll take care of this matter from here.
Mr. Bascom ain't gonna like it. Around here, we stomp our own snakes. We don't depend on no law dogs to do it.
Things are different now. You can start spreading the word, friend. Law and order have come to these parts.
I still don't like it.
All right, come on, you men. Get your asses back to work.
Greybeard and the men rode off, casting a few hostile glares back over their shoulders as they did so.
Whew, I thought for sure they were going to start shooting again.
Not cowboys like that. It may be pretty rough around the edges, but they're generally law-abiding. They respect that badge you're wearing, Jake.
People really do that?
Honest ones do. I don't reckon you'd know.
Honesty's like beauty, boys. It's only skin deep. Put enough temptation in anybody's way, and they'll forget all about being honest fast enough.
From the sound of what that varmint with a beard was saying, there's a range war brewing in these parts too, Bo. Go along with the other trouble the mayor of Whiskey Flats told Braddock about in that letter.
Yeah, I'd say you're right. Got a couple of fellas who fancy themselves cattle barons locking horns, and you can have a real problem on your hands.
But not me, right? I mean, I'm the town marshal. I don't have anything to do with what happens outside of the settlement.
According to the letter of the law, you're probably right. But a good lawman would poke his nose into anything that has an effect on what goes on in his town. And if a range war breaks out this close to Whiskey Flats, it's bound to spill over into the settlement, too.
I think you're taking this whole marshal business too seriously. I'm not really John Henry Braddock.
But you got to act like him for a while. Otherwise, people won't believe what we want them to believe. From what I've heard about Braddock, he wouldn't allow a shooting war to break out so close to any town where he was the marshal.
All right, all right. We'll get to the bottom of the rustling. Or try, anyway.
I think that would be best.
They had almost reached the rider who had been fleeing from the rocking bee hands. His shoulders slumped, and his head hung low, just like his horse's. Both of them were clearly exhausted. Even so, Riley and the Texans were taken slightly by surprise when the buckskin-clad figure suddenly swayed in the saddle for a moment and then pitched loosely to the ground to lie there motionless.
Good Lord! Maybe he was hit after all!
Bo was already moving, swinging down from the saddle and hurrying forward. He knelt at the side of the senseless figure, grabbed his shoulders, and rolled him onto his back. As Bo lifted the man's head, the battered old hat fell off. Long, red, luxuriously thick hair spilled out. Bo found himself staring down into the unconscious, unmistakably female face of a young woman, and an undeniably beautiful one at that.
Son of a gun! That's a girl!
And a mighty pretty one, too. She hurt, Bo?
I don't see any blood on her clothes. Don't think she stopped a slug, but I can't be sure yet.
Let me see if her heart's beating.
Riley slipped a hand inside the buckskin shirt. Bo started to tell him that it wasn't proper for him to be feeling around in that area on a woman he wasn't married to, but before he could say anything to Riley, the redhead's eyes snapped open. One small but evidently hard fist had shot up and smacked cleanly into Riley's jaw, knocking him over backward.
That's showing him, little missy!
The young woman jerked free from Bo, who wasn't really trying to hold her. She rolled over, came up agilely on one knee, and emptied the holster on her hip in a smooth, swift draw. The nickel-plated .38 revolver in her hand swung back and forth as she covered Bo, Scratch, and Riley at the same time.
What happened? Who are you men?
It appears that you fainted, ma'am. As for us, that fella you punched is Marshal John Henry Braddock, and we're his deputies, Bo Creel and Scratch Morton.
Marshal? What's a marshal doing pawing me like that?
Well, I was trying to make sure you weren't hurt. Excuse me for wanting to help you.
Felt to me like you were helping yourself. You can see that I'm all right, and I don't faint.
Suit yourself, ma'am. When you toppled off that horse, we were worried that you'd been hit by one of those slugs flying around you.
What happened to Bill Cavalier and the rest of those rockin' bee hands?
Well, they weren't happy about it, but they decided to leave it to the marshal to question you about some suspicious behavior.
Suspicious behavior, my hind foot. That bunch is so trigger-happy they were ready to shoot at anybody they ran into. Even somebody like me, they should have recognized. Idiots must have seen me a dozen times or more in town.
I reckon they just didn't get a good look at you.
No, they started blazing away as soon as they came in sight, without even waiting to find out who I was. And then they were too blinded by their own powder smoke to recognize me, I reckon.
I take it you're saying that you're not a rustler.
Do I look like a rustler to you?
Well, ma'am, I reckon rustlers can come in all sizes and, shapes.
I'm not a rustler.
The girl got to her feet, and while she didn't pouch the iron she held, she lowered it to her side so that it wasn't pointing at the Texans and Riley anymore.
As a matter of fact, I was taking a look around to see if I could find anything that would put me on the trail of whoever's been stealing Rockin' Bee's stock. Chet Bascom blamed Steve North, of course, but I don't believe North is behind the wide looping.
North being the other big rancher around here?
That's right.
And North and Bascom don't get along.
Never have, probably never will. You ask questions like a lawman, all right. You didn't say anything in your letters about bringing any deputies with you, Marshal.
Well, lawman's got to have good help. Somebody he can trust to watch his back whenever there's trouble. Well, how do you know about the letters?
I keep up pretty good with what goes on in the settlement. My grandfather founded it nearly 40 years ago. My name's Rawhide Abbott.
Rawhide? What sort of name is that for a girl?
It's mine, all right? You got a problem with it?
No problems at all, Miss Abbott.
I didn't think so.
Finally, the girl holstered the gun, picked up her hat, and tucked her hair under it, snugging the hat in place with the chin strap.
Let me get my horse and I'll ride on into town with you fellas.
Well, I can get him for you.
I've got him. No offense, Marshal, but I don't need no fancy pants 10-star to fetch a horse for me.
Riley shrugged and stood back while she got her own horse. Then he and Beau mounted up as well, and along with Scratch, they started down the trail toward Whiskey Flats.
You said your grandfather founded the town, Miss Abbott. Can you tell us about it?
Well, first of all, you can forget that stuffy Miss Abbott business. I'm Rawhide, and don't you forget it.
I don't think you'd let us do that.
Rawhide glared at him for a second, but otherwise didn't dignify his comment with a response.
Grandpap was a traitor. He brought wagon trains of supplies up and down the Santa Fe Trail back in the days when all this part of the country still belonged to Mexico. You two look old enough to remember that time.
Yeah, we sure are, ma'am. We're Texans born and bred and fought in the war to free our land from General Santa Annie.
One time when Grandpap was coming through these parts, he found himself a pretty spot with good water and decided that he wanted to stay instead of traipsing up and down that long, hard trail all the time. He started a trading post, and a little settlement grew up around it. After the Mexican War in 48, when this became American territory, the settlement grew even faster.
How'd the place get a name like Whiskey Flats?
Well, it had always been called Abbottville after my grandpap and my pa, who took over the trading post and turned it into a general store and built a lot of other businesses in town. But when the community leaders got together and petitioned the government for a post office by that name, they were turned down. Seems that there's already a town called Abbottville in New Mexico territory, somewhere down along the border. Nobody up here knew that. Some of the rowdy element in town had always called it Whiskey Flats because it had the only saloons in these parts. Somebody, and nobody's ever willing to take the blame, sent the name to the folks in Washington as a joke, and they accepted it. The post office was officially named Whiskey Flats, and so was the town. My pa raised hell with the government, but it didn't do any good.
It never does.
So we were stuck with the name. It always bothered Paul right up until the day he passed away a couple years ago.
What about your grandfather?
Oh, it never bothered Grandpap. He'd always been sort of a hellraiser, even after he settled down and started the settlement. He thought it was funny. To tell you the truth, Mr. Krill, it wouldn't surprise me a bit if he was the one who sent the Whiskey Flats name to Washington. Having a town named after him would have been a mite too stuffy for him anyway.
That explains the town's name. How'd you come to be called Rawhide?
What the hell business is it of yours?
None at all, I guess. I'm just curious. You're the first girl I've ever met who wore buckskins and packed a shooting iron, too.
Then maybe you've been hanging around with the wrong sort of girls. I bet your taste in women runs more toward painted-up saloon floozies and spangled dresses.
You're just about as touchy as all get out, aren't you? A fella can't even talk to you without getting his head bitten off.
I don't ever bite off more than I can chew. Best you remember that, Marshal. My grandpap tagged the Rawhide handle on me. He did most of the raising where I was concerned. My ma died when I was a baby, and my pa was always too busy with the store and all his other responsibilities around town to spend much time with me. I reckon Grandpap was more suited for grandsons and granddaughters because he taught me how to ride and hunt, fish, whittle, and cuss. Pa didn't know what to do with a little hellion like I turned out to be, so after a while, he just gave up, I reckon. He knew I wasn't ever gonna be no lady.
Yeah, look like you can handle that colt pretty good. Your grandpa must have been a fair hand with a gun, too. Wait a minute. Abbott? Your grandpa wasn't Hawk Abbott, was he?
That's right. Did you know him?
No. We heard tell of him, didn't we, Bo?
Hawk Abbott was one of the old-time mountain men. Trapped all over the Rockies with that fella called Preacher and his friends. I remember hearing rumors that he retired from trapping and went to hauling freight. I reckon they were true.
Yeah, Hawk Abbott was one tough hombre. I can see now where you get your, salty nature, ma'am. No offense.
None taken. Being compared to Grandpap is a compliment as far as I'm concerned.
Has he passed on too?
Yeah, a couple years before my pa died. Fever got him. I'm the last of the Abbotts, at least in these parts.
What about the general store and the other businesses your father was involved in?
Store's still operating. Pa left half of it to me and half of it to the fella who's been helping him to run it for years. He keeps it going and gives me a share of the profits. Same with the newspaper Pa started. The editor he hired runs it and owns half it now. Pa'd already sold all his interest in other businesses before he passed away. He hung on to the store and the paper so I'd be taken care of when he was gone. Pa didn't know what to make of me. But he loved me, I reckon.
Sounds like it, all right.
For the past several minutes, they had been riding up a long, gradual slope. Now as they reached the top, the ground on the far side fell away at a steeper slant, with the trail angling back and forth down it to a broad, green valley. A stream twisted through the valley. About a mile from where Bo, Scratch, Jake Riley, and Rawhide Abbott reined in, the buildings of Whiskey Flats were visible. The settlement had one long main street that crossed the creek on a wooden bridge that divided the town neatly in half. The northern part, closest to where the riders sat their saddles, had a number of businesses along the main street, with nice-looking houses lining a couple of cross streets. Bo saw a church steeple and another building that he pegged as a schoolhouse in that section of town. The other part, south of the bridge, also had a number of false-fronted businesses along the main street, but instead of homes, they were surrounded by adobe hovels, tar-paper shacks, and buildings of raw, hastily slapped-together lumber that probably served as cribs. It wasn't hard to tell, even from a distance, that the part of Whiskey Flats lying south of the bridge was the less reputable section.
That'd be the red light district on the other side of the creek?
That's right. There's not much over there except saloons, gambling dens, and, houses of ill repute.
So that's the part of town I'm supposed to clean up?
Hardly a day goes by without a gunfight, a knifing, or some back alley murder. The town fathers don't want all the places shut down, just the worst ones. They just want the killing to stop.
Of course, they don't want all the saloons and cribs shut down. And chances are, most of the respectable citizens in town sneak over there one or two nights a week for a little discreet hell-raising of their own.
You might be right about that. I wouldn't know.
They had continued riding and were drawing closer to the settlement now. It was a nice-looking place, Bo thought. He vaguely remembered hearing about a town called Abbottville when he and Scratch had passed through this area years earlier. He hadn't made the connection between that town and the one called Whiskey Flats until Rawhide had cleared it up with her little history lesson. The trail that they had been following turned into the northern end of Main Street. In the middle of the day like this, quite a few people were on the boardwalks. The hitch rails were full, and wagons and buckboards were parked in front of many of the businesses. Whiskey Flats was a bustling place. Bo saw some of the townspeople looking at them curiously. Rawhide would be known to them, but he, Scratch, and Riley were strangers, and strangers always provoked a lot of interest in frontier towns. As they drew closer to a large livery stable and wagon yard, a man stepped out from the barn and looked like he was about to hail them. Bo saw that he was tall, well-built, and had a close-cropped brown beard. He also wore a brown tweed suit, which meant he probably didn't work in the livery stable. He might own it, though. Just as the man lifted a hand to signal them to stop, gunshots roared not far away. Blast after blast ripped out, shattering the peaceful street scene. It sounded like a small-scale war had broken out south of the bridge, because that was where the shots were coming from.
Sounds like a job for you right away, Marshal.
Bo heeled his horse into a run.
Woo-wee!
Scratch, who was always ready for a ruckus, followed right behind Bo.
Come on, Marshal. Let's bring us some law and order to Whiskey Flats.
Riley hesitated before charging after them, but only for a second, Bo noted. As the fusillade of shots continued to slam out, Bo thought that the entrance of Marshal John Henry Braddock into Whiskey Flats was certainly going to be a dramatic one. The horses thundered over the wooden bridge separating the two sections of the settlement, steel-shod hooves ringing against the planks.
Ha! Ha!
Bo glanced over his shoulder and saw that Rawhide Abbott was riding with them, whipping her reins back and forth as she lashed her horse in an attempt to keep up. As they entered the southern part of town, clouds of powder smoke rolled from two buildings, one on each side of the street. It appeared that half a dozen or more gunmen were holed up in the buildings, blazing away at each other. The street had cleared, pedestrians on the boardwalks scurrying to get out of the line of fire. But there might be innocent bystanders in those buildings, and there was no telling where stray bullets might ricochet or who they might hurt. Bo, Scratch, and Riley had to put a stop to this battle royal as quickly as they could. It looked like Rawhide intended to help, as the men reined in and dismounted to crouch behind a parked wagon loaded with hay bales. The hay would stop any wild slugs that came in this direction.
I reckon those must be rival saloons.
Yeah, that's Tilden's Top Notch on the left and the Lariat Saloon on the right. The hard cases who hang around each place don't like the ones across the street. I don't know what set off this free-for-all, but it's bound to happen sooner or later. What are you going to do, Marshal?
Riley was wide-eyed and didn't look much like the cool-headed lawman he was supposed to be.
We'll do what the Marshal always has us do in a situation like this. We'll split up and come at them from behind. Right, Marshal?
Yeah, that's right, Deputy. You take the saloon on the left, Bo. Scratch, circle around behind the one on the right.
Which deputy are you going with, Marshal?
Well, I'll go with Deputy Creel, I reckon.
Then I'll go with Deputy Morton.
Now hold on, ma'am. No offense, but I ain't in the habit of going into a shooting scrape with a female back of a play.
And I'm not your ordinary female. Seems like you boys should have tumbled to that fact by now.
Go ahead, ma'am. Just be careful.
The hay wagon was parked on the left side of the street, so Bo and Riley didn't have as far to go.
We need to hit them as close to the same time as possible. So we'll give you a couple minutes to get in position, Scratch.
Good luck, partner.
You too, amigo.
Scratch would need the luck. No matter how tough and competent Rawhide was, or thought she was, Scratch's very nature would force him to try to look out for her while at the same time dealing with the threats to his own hide. Might as well try to get the sun to come up in the west as to change that. The two of them took off at a run toward an alley mouth across the street, while Bo and Riley waited a minute behind the hay wagon.
Are you sure we're doing the right thing?
As sure as an hombre can be when he's about to charge right into the middle of a big gun battle.
I never did anything like this before.
Just follow my lead. Those fellas inside the Top Notch will likely be clustered up at the front of the building. We'll go in the back and try to get the drop on them before they know what's going on. Cover them as best you can, and maybe they'll decide to give up the fight and drop their guns.
And if they don't? If they start shooting at us instead?
You're the law. You'll be justified in shooting back at them, Jake. Or should I say, Marshal Bragg. Scratch and the girl ought to be ready by now. Let's go.
The two of them ducked into an alley on this side of the street. Riley looked a little like he was about to be sick, Bo thought. But it was too late for either of them to back out now. They had a job to do. Bo just hoped that luck would smile on Scratch and Rawhide across the street. In a way, it was lucky that he had the gal along, Scratch reflected as he and Rawhide hustled along the narrow, trash-littered lane behind the buildings. She knew the town, knew which of the rear doors led into the Lariat Saloon. Unfortunately, that door turned out to be locked. Scratch knew that he could shoot it open or kick it down, but if he caused a commotion like that, it would warn the men inside the saloon that a new threat was on its way in from the rear. He looked around and spotted a window not far away. It was closed, though, and the sill was too high to reach easily. Rawhide saw where he was looking, and seeming to read his mind, she holstered her gun.
Give me a boost, and I'll see if it's open.
A boost?
That's right, Deputy. I reckon you're a mite too big for me to boost you up there.
Oh, yeah. Right. Oh, come on, hurry up. We don't want Bo and the Marshal getting too far ahead of us.
Scratch pouched his irons, moved over to the window, and bent over, lacing his hands together to form a stirrup. Rawhide put her hands on Scratch's shoulders and placed a booted foot in his hands. That brought her bosom level with his face and made his ears start to warm up. Scratch lifted her as she pushed down on his shoulders. That embarrassed him even more, because now his face was practically shoved up against her lady parts. Luckily, they had some nice thick buckskins covering them. Scratch loved women, but his taste ran more toward widow ladies and the occasional unsatisfied wife, although he never pursued a gal he absolutely knew to be hitched. But he felt downright uncomfortable being this intimate with a girl young enough to be his granddaughter. Thankfully, the experience didn't last long. Rawhide clambered through the window, her weight departing from Scratch's grip. She turned around and stuck her hand back out.
Come on!
Look, I'm a mite too old for acrobatics like that. Why don't you just unlock the door?
Yeah, I guess I could do that. Hang on.
The shooting hadn't let up any. As he hurried through the door that Rawhide swung open for him, Scratch figured these old boys were wasting enough powder and shot to have stood off an attack by Comanche. He drew his guns again as he saw that they were in a back room used for storage. From the sound of the shots, one flimsy door was all that stood between them and the combatants. Rawhide had her nickel-plated revolver in her hand again, too.
You ready?
Sure am.
You open it, I'll go through first.
Why you and not me?
Because I got two guns and you got a free hand.
Rawhide understood and nodded. She reached for the doorknob. She flung the door back, and Scratch rushed into the saloon's main room, brandishing the twin Remingtons. Rawhide was right behind him.
Hold it!
Scratch's keen eyes took in the scene in a heartbeat. A couple of poker tables had been overturned and moved up to the front windows to serve as cover behind which crouched six gunmen, three on each side of the bat-winged entrance. Those bat wings were riddled with bullet holes, but they still swung back and forth a little under the impact of fresh slugs. The reek of spilled liquor filled the air, along with the sharp tang of powder smoke, because most of the bottles that had been arrayed along the back bar in glittering ranks had been busted all to hell by flying lead. A couple of heavily made-up soiled doves peeked nervously over the bar from where they crouched behind the relative safety of the thick hardwood, and with them was a little bald man with bulging eyes and a prominent Adam's apple. At the unexpected entrance of Scratch and Rawhide, the man's fish eyes rolled up in their sockets, and he disappeared from sight. The hard cases at the windows whirled around to meet this new threat. They found themselves staring down the barrels of Scratch's Remingtons and Rawhide's nickel-plated Colt. That didn't stop one man from jerking up his own gun in an attempt to get off a shot. The gunman was thrown back against the overturned table behind him as Scratch's bullet shattered his upper right arm. The gun he had tried to use went flying from nerveless fingers. Another man clearly thought about trying to get a shot off too, but Rawhide pointed her Colt at him.
Just try it, mister.
The man reluctantly lowered his gun.
Drop him, now!
One by one, the guns hit the floor. The eerie silence that followed the end of every battle filled the room. It wasn't too quiet, though, because shots still blasted from across the street, and one of the few surviving bottles behind the bar shattered.
Anytime, Bo.
If Bo and Jake Riley didn't put a stop to all the shooting from the top notch, and mighty damned soon, Scratch and Rawhide still stood a good chance of getting ventilated. Bo and Riley didn't encounter anyone as they hurried along the alley and then turned into the lane behind the saloon. Most of the buildings had a similar ramshackle look from behind, but Bo was able to pick out the one that housed Tilden's top-notch saloon. The barrage of gunshots coming from inside it was a dead giveaway, so to speak. Bo tried the back door and found it unlocked.
You ready?
Ready as I'm gonna be, I guess. I can tell you now, though, I'm not cut out for this law and order business.
You'll be fine. And think how much more willing the townspeople will be to accept you as Marshal John Henry Braddock once you put a stop to this ruckus.
Yeah, you're right. Nobody will doubt that I'm who I say I am after this.
Let's go.
Bo twisted the knob and eased the door open. Since it wasn't locked, he and Riley didn't have to charge in. They could take their time and see what the situation was. Motioning for Riley to take it as quietly as possible, Bo cat-footed into a narrow little passageway with doors opening off both sides. The door to the left was ajar and revealed a small office, while the other door was closed. Bo and Riley slipped past them to a door at the far end of the corridor. The shots were louder now, so Bo knew that the saloon's main room was right on the other side of that door. Still moving stealthily, he opened that one as well and stepped out into the bar room. The thunder of gunfire was almost deafening as seven men crouched at the front windows and poured lead at the saloon across the street. No one was in sight behind the bar. Bo and Riley moved forward, their guns trained on the murderous hard cases. Suddenly, movement flickered to their right. A burly man in a tight tweed suit popped up behind the bar, a shotgun in his hand.
Look out behind you, boys!
As the man swung the greener toward Bo and Riley, Riley's gun arm came up in a blur. The barrels of the burly man's shotgun tilted up as they discharged, blowing a hole in the ceiling as he collapsed behind the bar. The shouted warning had alerted the gunmen by the window, and they jerked around.
Freeze! Drop those guns!
One of the men ignored the command. Bo fired twice. Both bullets punched into the man's belly and doubled him over. Another man fired, just inches away from Riley. The young man pulled the trigger again. This time, the bullet plowed into the floor right at the gunman's feet. That was enough to upset the man's balance as he crouched and sent him toppling forward. Bo took a fast step forward and brought the barrel of his gun down across the man's head, laying him out senseless on the floor. Bo moved back just as swiftly and covered the remaining hard cases. The fight seemed to have gone out of them.
In the name of the law, drop those guns!
Bo thought that was a nice touch. Maybe Riley was getting more enthusiastic about posing as John Henry Braddock. At any rate, it worked, because guns began to hit the floor as the other men let go of them and put up their hands.
Nice and easy, boys.
Bo herded the captured hard cases away from their guns and out through the bullet-shattered bat wings, leaving behind the man Bo had shot. It had taken only a quick check for the Texan to confirm that he was dead. Across the street, Scratch and Rawhide Abbott marched their prisoners out of the Lariat Saloon.
Looks like we got the job done.
That's right. Your plan worked perfectly, Marshal.
If Rawhide remembered that it had actually been Bo who suggested the strategy, she didn't say anything. Bo's comment was overheard by people who started to poke their heads out of nearby buildings now that the shooting had stopped, just as he'd intended. He couldn't think of a better way to introduce Marshal John Henry Braddock to the citizens of Whiskey Flats. Already, folks were pointing at Riley and talking to each other in hushed voices. The new marshal was making quite an impression. Bo turned to the young woman and went on.
Since you seem to know everything there is to know about this settlement, Rawhide, can you tell us if there's a jail?
There sure is, just north of the creek, so it's handy to where most of the trouble is. The town council had it built a couple years ago, got a marshal's office in it and everything. But nobody held the job long enough to even get the place dirty.
Why's that?
Either they saw how impossible it was and gave up, or they got themselves dead.
Judging from the expression that passed across Riley's face, he wished that he hadn't asked the question.
Well, Marshal, what do you want us to do with these prisoners?
What else, Deputy? Take them to jail and lock them up. It's time folks know that law has come to Whiskey Flats.
The man whose arm had been busted by Scratch's bullet complained mightily as the prisoners marched at gunpoint across the bridge.
I'm gonna get gangrene if this arm of mine isn't doctored up.
We'll see that you get medical attention.
I wouldn't have shot you if you hadn't been trying to shoot me first.
There was no arguing with that logic, so the wounded man fell into a sullen silence.
I reckon you do have a sawbones in this town.
Sure. Tooney, run and fetch Doc Summers.
While the townie ran off up the street, another man hurried toward the group. Bo recognized him as the fellow who had stepped out of the livery stable as they were coming into the settlement. He thrust out a hand toward Riley.
Marshal Braddock?
Yeah, that's right.
I'm Mayor Jonas McHale. It's an honor to meet you, Marshal. An absolute honor.
Well, the pleasure is all mine, Mayor.
We weren't expecting your arrival in Whiskey Flats to be accompanied by such excitement. What happened down there on the other side of the bridge?
The feud between the hard cases who hung out at the Lariat and the ones at the Top Notch finally boiled over into a shooting war, Jonas. But the Marshal and his deputies put a stop to that quick enough.
Deputies? Marshal, I don't recall you saying anything about bringing deputies with you.
I just assumed I'd be able to hire whoever I needed to help me do the job.
Oh, of course, of course. It's just that the town council didn't make any provision for extra wages. But don't worry about that. I'm sure we can come up with something that'll be agreeable. We want you to have whatever you need, Marshal.
Well, right now, I'd say that a good place to stay would be in order.
Naturally, we've got the best room in the hotel reserved for you, for as long as you want. Of course, you might decide to settle down here and want something more permanent.
The hotel room will be fine for now.
And there are cots in the marshal's office where your deputies can stay.
Scratch glanced at Bo, who knew what his old friend was thinking. Riley got the comfortable hotel room, while all they got were cots in what was probably a drafty old marshal's office. Bo just smiled, and Scratch shook his head, trying not to look too disgusted.
Are you going to stand around here jabbering all day? You're going to get me to the doctor before I bleed to death.
Doc Summers will be here in just a minute. Take it easy.
But actually, Miss Abbott, why don't you and Deputy Morton take the wounded man to the doctor's office? Deputy Creel and I can jail these other fellas. Oh, and by the way, the undertaker will be needed for at least one man there in the Top Notch, maybe two. Someone should check on the man behind the bar.
A big fella in a flashy suit?
That's right. I was forced to shoot him when he jumped up from behind the bar and threatened us with a shotgun.
That's Big Mickey Tilden, the owner of the Top Notch. Did you kill him?
I don't know. He didn't give me a lot of time to place my shot.
Someone had better check on him, too.
Well, here comes Ed Chamberlain. Ed's our local coffin maker and undertaker.
Chamberlain was a short, cherubic hombre with a pink scalp. Not at all like the cadaverous undertakers usually found in frontier towns.
Got some new business for me, Jonas?
Now there's at least one dead man in the Top Notch. Mickey Tilden's shot too, and maybe dead.
I'll go see about that right now.
Now make sure he's actually deceased before you haul him off to your place.
Did you ever know me to plant a live one?
Ed's a member of our town council. I'll introduce you to him formally later, Marshal, along with all the other members of the council. I'm sure they'll all be glad to meet you.
And I'll be glad to meet them. Meanwhile, let's get these prisoners behind bars where they belong. We'll talk later, Mayor.
Scratch and Rawhide took the wounded man up the street to the doctor's office, while Bo and Riley marched the rest of the prisoners over to the squat, stone and log building that served as the marshal's office and jail for Whiskey Flats. Despite the fact that no one had been able to occupy it for very long so far, the building had a solid look about it. The walls were thick, and the windows in the rear part of the building were all small and closed off with iron bars, so Bo knew the cell block had to be located back there. When they went inside, he saw that he was right. The office was rather sparsely furnished, with a roll-top desk and chair, a gun rack on the wall with a couple of Winchesters and a shotgun in it, a black pot-bellied stove in the corner, and an old armchair. A couple of cots were folded and leaned in a corner. Directly across from the entrance door was the heavy door to the cell block, which stood open at the moment, because the four cells, two on each side of a short corridor, were empty. Not for long, though, because Bo and Riley herded the prisoners into them, splitting them up so that the hard cases from the Top Notch were on one side and the men from the Lariat on the other.
I saw the keys on a ring hanging from a nail beside the desk.
If you're gonna lock us up in here, you gotta feed us. It's the law.
Shut up. It's a long time until supper, and if you cause any trouble, we'll just see if you get anything to eat.
You damned high-handed badge-toter! You can't tell us
that! Shut up, I said.
Riley grinned as he and Bo went back out into the office, and Bo swung the cell block door shut. Bo took down the ring, found the right key, and locked it as well.
That was fun. Maybe I'm starting to understand why some fellas want to be lawmen.
It's a good job to have if you like bossing folks around. But mainly, you should want to help folks, too.
Yeah, sure. You seem to know a lot about this marshal business, Bo. You sure you and Scratch haven't worn badges before?
As a matter of fact, we have, on a few rare occasions. Most of the time, though, our encounters with the law have been from the other side of the bars, like those hombres back there in the cell block now. You see, whenever trouble breaks out, most star packers look for the nearest stranger to blame it on. And since Scratch and I are strangers just about everywhere we go...
Yeah, I know the feeling. I've been blamed for a few things I didn't do, too. But mostly for things that I did do.
Bo checked the drawers of the desk and found them empty except for a stack of reward dodgers that one of the previous occupants had left there. He flipped through them curiously, checking to see if he and Scratch were on any of them. They weren't actually wanted anywhere at the moment that he knew of, but at times in the past, their pictures had turned up on reward posters as the result of misunderstandings or overzealous lawmen. He didn't find any in this batch, though. He didn't find any with Riley's picture on them either, although to tell the truth, he wouldn't have been surprised if he had.
You know, that hombre back there was right. We'll have to feed them. That means making arrangements for the cafe or hash house and getting the town council to pay for it. You know, now that I think about it, there are probably a lot of little details to run in a law office that aren't apparent right off.
You mean it's not all fun and games, like nearly getting our asses shot off?
No, there's likely some actual work involved, too.
Well, since you're the deputy, I expect you'll be handling most of that. I think I should go out and introduce myself to the townspeople. You know, let them see that there's a new marshal in these parts.
That's not a bad idea. You might want to let one of us go with you, though. I'm sure Scratch will be back soon.
Riley looked like he wanted to argue, but before he could do so, the office door opened and Scratch came in, no longer accompanied by Rawhide Abbott.
That fella you shot is still alive, right enough. The doc came down to the Top Notch to check on him and said he might pull through. Then that pink-cheeked little undertaker hauled him down to the doc's office in his meat wagon. I left that feisty redheaded gal down at the Sawbones place keeping an eye on that fellow whose wing I busted. Doc Summers said he'd patch it up and set it. He gave the fellow a little morphine to tide him over whilst he tended to Tilden, so I don't think he's going anywhere for a while. He looked about as groggy as a Chinaman in an opium den when I left. I'll go back and get him later.
That sounds fine. We probably won't be able to charge these fellows with anything except disturbing the peace anyway. Somebody will have to set a fine for them. We'll talk to the mayor about that.
See? I told you you were good at these little details, Bo. Now, let's go take that walk around town, why don't we?
You mind staying here with the prisoners for a while?
Nope. Especially not if I can put my feet up for a spell.
Go to it, old-timer.
Old-timer? I ain't but a couple of months older than you, Bo. Just proving that old saying about age before beauty.
There was nothing Bo could say to that, so he just shook his head and left the office with Riley. The boardwalks were crowded with pedestrians now, and the whole settlement was buzzing about the brief but violent gun battle between the two groups of hard cases and the way the new marshal and his deputies had galloped into town and put a stop to it with some fast gunplay. As Riley made his appearance and began strolling along with Bo at his side, well-wishers crowded around him, eager to shake his hand and introduce themselves. Riley grinned widely, pumped every hand that was thrust at him, and tipped his hat to all the ladies, who seemed quite taken by his dashing good looks. Bo stayed in the background, letting Riley bask in the glory. This was the part that Riley was good at, glad-handing and showing off for the townspeople. Mayor McHale must have been alert for any commotion, because he emerged from the livery stable again and came over to Bo and Riley.
Let our new marshal breathe, folks. There'll be plenty of time for all of you to get to know him, because John Henry Braddock is going to be around Whiskey Flats for a long time. Isn't that right, Marshal?
We'll be here until the job's done, that's for sure.
I was hoping to get the chance to show you around. Come with me, Marshal.
Bo trailed a couple of steps behind as McHale guided Riley up the street, pointing out all the businesses. The mayor himself owned the livery stable and wagon yard, as well as a freight line that ran between Whiskey Flats and Santa Fe. The settlement had just about everything such a frontier cattle town needed, including two general stores. One of them, Abbott and Carson, would be the one that had grown from the trading post started by old Hawk Abbott, Rawhide's grandfather. There was also a butcher shop, a blacksmith shop, a saddle maker, a gunsmith, a barber, hot baths, 50 cents, also teeth pulled, a sign next to the striped pole announced, a hotel, a cafe, a newspaper, the Whiskey Flats Clarion, which Rawhide's father had started, Bo recalled, an apothecary, the undertaking parlor run by Ed Chamberlain, the house where Dr. Edwin Summers' medical practice was located, even a millinery shop that catered to the ladies in town. There were a couple of churches, a school that was open part of the year whenever the town could get a teacher, and a meeting hall where dances, political rallies, and town meetings were held. And that was just north of the bridge. Mayor McHale didn't say anything about the part of the settlement south of the bridge, and when Riley pointed that out, the mayor paused and frowned.
To tell you the truth, it would be all right with most of us in this part of town if everything south of the bridge disappeared.
Well, I don't reckon we can run them out entirely, but we can certainly do our best to clean them up and stop all the violence down there. Give me and my deputies a chance, Mayor, and we'll make a big difference here in Whiskey Flats.
I'm sure you will. Anything we can do to help you, you just ask.
Well, if you could point me towards that hotel room you mentioned, I wouldn't mind freshening up. We've been on the trail for quite a few days, and it's been a long, dusty ride.
Of course.
Our horses need taken care of, too.
I've already thought of that. Just a little while ago, I told my hustlers to see to them, to give them the best stalls in the barn, a good rubdown, and plenty of grain and water.
We're much obliged.
Come on, Marshal, and I'll introduce you to Warren McCready, who owns the hotel.
That's exactly the man I want to meet. Now keep an eye on the town while I see about that hotel room, won't you, Deputy Creel?
Sure, Marshal. You don't have to worry about a thing.
Once Riley had gone off with Mayor McHale, Bo found that the citizens of Whiskey Flats weren't nearly as interested in him. In fact, they pretty much left him alone to amble around the town and continue looking it over. Bo paused when he found himself on the boardwalk outside the Morning Glory Cafe. Since Riley was counting on him to take care of the mundane details of running the marshal's office, Bo decided to go on in and see if he could make arrangements for the feeding of current and future prisoners in the jail. At this time of day, the place was fairly busy, and Bo's stomach reminded him that he hadn't eaten since breakfast. The tables, covered with blue-checked cloths, were all occupied, but there were empty seats at the counter. As Bo took one of them, brushing back the long tails of his black coat as he did so, a woman emerged from the kitchen through a swinging door behind the counter. She carried a tray containing several plates heaped with steak and potatoes and other fixins. Bo was immediately struck by how handsome she was, with dark hair only lightly threaded with silver done up in a bun on the back of her head. Her eyes were a piercing blue. She wore a white apron over a gingham dress, and the dress was snug enough to reveal that she was a fine figure of a woman. Bo looked at her left hand, checking for a wedding ring, and felt a little odd for doing so, since that was usually Scratch's reaction to a good-looking woman of a certain age. No ring. Bo was pleased by that, which was even odder, but then he reminded himself that she could still be married and just not wearing her ring at the moment because she was working. She saw him sitting there on the counter stool, gave him a smile and a brief nod.
I'll be right with you, mister, as soon as I deliver this food.
No hurry. I'll study the menu while you're gone.
Bo nodded toward a board on the wall behind the counter, which read simply, breakfast, 25 cents, lunch, 50 cents, supper, 40 cents. Bo liked the sound of her laughter. She moved out from behind the counter with the tray and carried the lunches over to one of the tables where several hungry-looking men waited impatiently. Judging by the delicious aromas in the air and the eager reactions of the customers, Bo thought the food at the Morning Glory Cafe had to be pretty darned good. Carrying the empty tray, the woman came back behind the counter.
What can I do for you?
Reckon I'll have lunch.
Good choice. New in town, aren't you?
Yes, ma'am. Name's Bo Creel.
You're one of the new marshal's deputies. I heard some of the men talking about you in that big shootout south of the bridge.
Guilty as charged, ma'am.
Goodness, don't call me ma'am. Everybody just calls me Velma. Mrs. Velma Dearborn. My late husband started this cafe, and now I run it.
So it's your place, then?
That's right. You figured I was just the waitress, didn't you?
I didn't think about it one way or the other, ma'am. Velma.
That was because Bo had been too busy taking note of the fact that she was a widow, he thought. He'd definitely have to introduce Scratch to her, since she was the sort of gal he really liked. Or maybe he wouldn't. Just yet.
I've got an old Swede who cooks for me. Otherwise, I do just about everything around here, including sweeping out the place. And right now, I better see about getting your food to you.
She went out to the kitchen, the door flapping shut behind her. And when she was gone, the whiskery old-timer sitting next to Bo dug an elbow in his ribs.
Mighty pretty filly, ain't she?
That she is.
I reckon half the fillies in this town would eat here, even if the food wasn't so good. Not that it does them any good. Velma's friendly to everybody, but she don't get close to nobody. Not since her husband passed away a few years ago. Darn shame, if you ask me. Good-looking gal like that a-withering on a vine. But what can you do? It's up to her what she does.
Bo nodded in agreement with the garrulous townie. It sounded like any man who got interested in Velma Dearborn would have a challenge on his hands if he tried to court her, which meant it was good that he wasn't looking to do such a thing. Velma came back a couple of minutes later with a plate for Bo. The steak was a little tough, but nothing compared to some of the buffalo steaks he had eaten in his time, and it had a fine flavor to it to compensate for the added chewing required. The potatoes were fried just right and seasoned with a little wild onion. A couple of fluffy biscuits worked mighty fine for sopping up gravy. Bo dug in with gusto and thoroughly enjoyed the meal, especially when Velma placed a glass of buttermilk in front of him. The buttermilk was cold enough so that drops of condensation formed on the glass and trickled down the sides.
What'd I tell you? Best grub in the territory, if you ask me.
I reckon you might be right at that.
Bo lingered over his meal until the lunch rush was over.
Mrs. Dearborn, I have a question for you.
It's not another marriage proposal, is it? No offense, but I'm not looking to get hitched again.
Neither am I, ma'am.
Bo had been married once, back in the days when Texas was a republic, but sickness had taken his wife and children. That tragedy had marked the beginning of his wandering days with Scratch, and he had never considered starting a family again. Bo was the sort of man who loved once in his life with great and enduring passion. Although he still got some enjoyment out of whirling a pretty gal around a dance floor from time to time and such like as that.
What I had in mind was to ask if you'd be interested in providing meals for the prisoners over at the jail. Your food is better than what they deserve, no doubt about that. But you'd be feeding the deputies on a regular basis, too. Meaning me and my pard Scratch.
Do you plan on having many prisoners over there, Deputy Creel?
Call me Bo. We got nearly a dozen hombres locked up right now, and there's no telling how many there'll be in the future. Marshal Braddock intends to clean up the town. That's what he was hired for.
And about time, too, if you ask me. The goings-on south of the bridge give the whole town a bad name, as if calling the place Whiskey Flats wasn't bad enough to start with. And then, too, the violence spills over into this part of town sometimes. When bullets start to fly over there, they don't stop at the creek.
No, ma'am, they wouldn't.
Would I get paid for providing meals to the jail?
Of course. You'd be paid a fair rate. I'd see to that.
Talked it over with Mayor McHale, have you?
Well, no. Not yet. But he seems ready to give Marshal Braddock anything he needs to help bring law and order to the settlement.
The whole town council feels that way, I expect, or they wouldn't have hired such a famous lawman. All right. If you can work the payment out with the mayor, I'll take the job. I warn you, though. Sometimes Jonas McHale can be pretty tight with a dollar.
I'll have Marshal Braddock ask him about it. That ought to smooth the way. That was the best meal I've had in a long time, Velma. I'm much obliged.
Come back anytime, Bo. Pot roast for supper tonight.
I'm looking forward to it already.
As he moseyed back toward the marshal's office and jail, Bo figured Scratch was probably wondering where he'd gotten off to. Nobody paid much attention to him. The inhabitants of Whiskey Flats had settled back into their normal routines after the excitement of the gun battle and the arrival of Marshal John Henry Braddock. When Bo came into the office, he found that Scratch had gotten some water and coffee from somewhere and started a pot of Arbuckles boiling. Bo had noticed the battered old coffee pot on a shelf near the stove when he was there earlier. Scratch sat to one side of the roll top with his chair leaned back and his feet propped on the front corner of the desk.
Careful of those spurs. You'll gouge holes in the desk.
Well, won't be the first ones. Looks like a bullet hit here, and there's three or four more like it. The way they're arranged, I'd say one of the fellows who had this job before was sitting back here when somebody opened up on him from the window and blew his lights out. Now, what sort of damn fool would leave his desk sitting so that his back was to the window?
That's a good question. We'll move that desk around or just not use it.
And best warn the marshal about it, too. I say, those varmints in there are still caterwauling about being hungry.
I'm working on that. Why don't you go down to the doctor's office and fetch that fellow with the busted arm back here? Then go try out the food at the Morning Glory Cafe.
Good eats, are they?
Mighty good. And the proprietor is a mighty fetching widow woman, too.
Well, now, why didn't you say something sooner? I'll have that wounded hombre back here locked up in a hurry, and then I'll go see about getting some lunch.
I'm going to try to get the town to hire Mrs. Dearborn to provide meals for the jail.
Mrs. Dearborn, huh?
Velma Dearborn.
Ooh, Velma Dearborn. That's a pretty name. I ain't surprised that a pretty lady goes with it. If I ain't back by supper time, you know where to look for me.
Oh, you'll be back before then. You got a prisoner to fetch, remember?
Oh, yeah. Dang it.
Scratch hurried out, eager to be finished with this chore so that he could check out the food at the cafe and the lady who was dishing it out. A little later, Riley came in, seeming quite pleased with himself.
Get settled in at the hotel, Marshal?
I sure did. It's a pretty nice place for a town like this. Got a big bed with a nice soft mattress.
Tried it out already, did you?
Well, it's been a hectic day. I just caught a little nap, that's all, and then had a late dinner in the hotel dining room. Where's Scratch?
Picking up the other prisoner at the doctor's office. He ought to be back with the fellow pretty soon. Then we'll have the whole bunch locked up except for Tilden, the one I had to shoot. You'll need to talk to the mayor about scheduling a hearing for the prisoners and an inquest for the dead man. Is there an actual judge in town?
Hell if I know. Can't you find out about things like that?
It might look better if you did. You don't want folks to get the idea that you're not in charge.
Yeah, you're right. Gotta put the act over for a little while. You have any ideas how we're gonna fleece these suckers?
Well, I've always got ideas. But it'll be better if we let things sort of percolate for a while.
I suppose. I just don't want to have to keep this up for too long. As long as I'm wearing this badge, somebody's liable to start shooting at me again.